Give glory to God, our light and our life.
You're listening to the recordings of sessions from the Institute on Liturgy, Preaching, and Church Music in July of 2024, hosted by Concordia University, Nebraska. If you'd like to learn more about past LCMS worship institutes or about those that might be coming soon, visit lcms.org/worship-institute.
About 1:15, so let's go ahead and get started. And let's start with the psalm that's been assigned to this session, Psalm 125. Hopefully everyone saw the handouts on their way in. I got a metricized version of this psalm, and I put it as you can often do, put it with any sort of hymn tune that is in the same meter. So this metricized psalm text was in common meter, so we can put it with Asmund, one of the most popular hymn tunes that goes to, oh, for a thousand tongues to sing. And it's also a really great hymn tune to play on piano, so that is what we will do today. We'll give an introduction and we'll be off for five verses of Psalm 125. This particular congregation has done for years before I got there was have a Wednesday evening service throughout the year, and when it's not the seasons of Advent and Lent, those services are done as a more informal hymn request kind of service, where congregation members will request hymns both out of the LSB and another hymnal that we use, which contains a number of hymns from the Baptist and more revivalist traditions, which if you don't know Oklahoma is Baptist country. So we've got a lot of congregation members who grew up in Baptist churches or otherwise appreciate those more American vernacular hymns. So we play a lot of them on Wednesday evenings, and those services are always led from the piano. So I have to play a lot of hymns every week, not just on the organ, but also on the piano. So I got the idea to do a session like this when I was talking with an Oregon colleague of mine and mentioning about this Wednesday evening piano-led hymn sing service that I do. And he responded by, man, that must be really difficult. You can't vary up the verses of the hymns like you can on organ. And, well, you know, organ may have it easier in some ways that you can immediately just change the stops and immediately get different colors, different octaves. But the piano actually has a lot of variety to its textures that you can use so that you don't just have to play what's written in an SATB hymnal straight all the time. And certainly, you know, given how many times certain congregation members like to request Blessed Assurance on Wednesday evenings, if I was just going to play that the same way every week, I would personally start getting really bored. So just for my own sanity, I've had to develop ways to keep varying up the way in which I play hymns, in ways that don't detract from the congregation being able to sing, but in ways that enhance the text and create more consistent musical interest as well. Of course, when you're dealing with the piano, and for liturgical traditions like the Lutheran tradition, a lot of the focus is often put on how to play hymns from the organ and the particular idiom that organ hymn playing needs. Piano is a very different instrument from organ. If you haven't known, just because there's keys here and there's keys on an organ, you don't play them the same way at all. So you have to approach the piano like a piano, not like an organ. The organ is a wind instrument. The piano is a percussion instrument. The organ, once you hit a key, it'll keep that sound going until you release the key. On the piano, you hit it and the sound is already decaying. The organ, you'll want to use typically a very legato touch with potentially some more detached articulation as well. Piano, you're going to want a lot more rhythmic activity. So on organ, you know, for instance, for this tune, Asmund, if you were doing this on organ, you'd probably not necessarily restrike every note, every chord. You'd do it something like. But on piano, it works a lot better to have rhythmic interest of restriking every chord. Much more effectively than trying to imitate an organ sound. Playing hymns idiomatically on piano versus organ requires playing more notes more often and departing from the page more. You can get by pretty well just with using the SATB hymnal voicing on organ. For piano, it's a little bit more tricky to make it come off really well just sticking to SATB. And there's ways to really make it sound more pianistic for congregational accompaniment. Now, when you come to particular hymns, you're sitting at the piano, you've got a particular hymn that you need to play. It's important to know what kind of hymn you're dealing with, to know what you can do with it. And maybe the first thing to know is how fast is the harmonic rhythm of the hymn? How quickly do the chords change? So many hymns, especially older hymns, a lot of Lutheran chorales, a lot of Anglican hymns, they will change the harmony on potentially every melodic note. So for instance, in a Bach harmonization, like his one for O Sacred Head Now Wounded, he even changes chords on the same melody note. The busier the harmony is, the harder it is to do idiomatic piano figurations without changing the harmony. If you've got a slow harmonic rhythm, like when you start getting into later hymn traditions, hymns from the 19th century, such as What a Friend We Have in Jesus, that measure is all basically F major. And that allows allows you to do a lot more pianistic figurations that would be difficult to get away with if you weren't having to change the harmony every beat. There's also things like contemporary songs, like we have in LSB, Seek Ye First, which is an older contemporary song. This is another one where the harmony is basically one chord per measure. So it works a lot better to do. Start using some pianistic arpeggios. And this sort of style, especially once you get to, sort of 19th century American hymn tunes, those tunes are often being written primarily with piano in mind as the accompaniment, more than organ. And especially once you get to things like Seek Ye First or more recent contemporary songs, they're really thinking of piano first and foremost. If there's just one instrument accompanying, it's piano or guitar. But sticking with keyboards, it's piano that they're really thinking of. So it works better that way. One other thing that you'll want to know, so you know what you can deal with, is if the hymn is written to sing in parts or it's written to sing in unison. So the ideal of hymn singing, originally, when you first start with vernacular hymns in the Lutheran Reformation, the idea was that it would be, if the congregation is going to sing it, it would be sung in unison. But by the time you get, especially to the 19th and 20th century, the ideal of congregational hymn singing has really become much more about SATB singing. So a lot of hymns that are written in the 19th century American context will even have different rhythms and different voice parts included for ATB singers. So they'll not just envision unison. So for instance, the chorus of It Is Well With My Soul. It is imagining that there are ATB singers in the congregation who will take those lower voices. But in the 20th century, in the later 20th century, a lot of music began to be written just with unison singing in mind. Some of these unison hymns would envision an organ texture, but a lot of these would envision a piano texture. Any songs like Thy Word Is a Lamp Unto My Feet, would not be envisioning that the congregation would have any harmonies beneath it, but that everyone would be singing on the melody. And so, contemporary hymns that come out of, for instance, the Getty Music Circle, By Faith, In Christ Alone, anything of that sort, would certainly be envisioning unison singing for the congregation and not part singing. So if it's designed to be sung with parts and your congregation is going to sing parts, then you should probably stick mostly to the harmonies that are in the hymnal, because those are the harmonies that they'll be singing. If it's a unison hymn, then you can get away with more harmonic changes and with adjusting the harmony for your pianistic needs. So those are considerations to keep in mind as you're looking at particular hymns. And when you're looking what to do with them at the piano, there are several basic building blocks of piano texture. The first one that I've listed there is octaves. So that is a particularly pianistic thing. Whether you do them in the left hand or right hand in the bass or the melody, that will create a particular pianistic sound. And then, of course, you can fill out those octaves with chords. And one thing that works particularly well on piano, which doesn't work on organ, is if you repeat those chords. So that's another important building block for playing hymns on the piano. And then, of course, there are arpeggios, which make one of the most distinctive pianistic figurations. So you're not just playing on the bass, but you've got... And that's one of the most basic ways to fill out harmonies on the piano. breaking the chord and using the sustain pedal to create that harmonic sensation, while at the same time keeping the rhythmic motion going. And of course, another important building block of piano texture that you can do on piano, which you can't do on organ, is actually voicing chords. So taking a particular note out of the chord and bringing that out. So you can bring out any and knowing, okay, for this verse, maybe I'll bring out the bass a little bit, and for this verse, maybe I can bring out the tenor or the alto voice a little bit. That in of itself is a crucial tool to bringing out maybe musical lines that people hadn't heard before, but that create a nice counterpoint to the melody that people are singing. So with these sorts of building blocks, it is important to practice your scales, practice your arpeggios, practice your chords. I assume most of you who have had piano teachers who have insisted on scales, and they are insisted on for a reason, because they actually come into practical use. The more comfortable you are in just playing scales and arpeggios, the more you can freely play at the piano rather than feel like you're tied to notes on a page, because you know how those keys feel in your hands, you know the figurations that you can use to create that pianistic interest when playing music on the piano. So let's start talking about some particular techniques. And I've basically listed just a bunch of different individual techniques that you can use at your discretion in various hymns. And one of the most basic ones is simply, even if you're just taking a basic hymn tune, instead of playing the melody just at pitch, you can add the upper octave. And then you get the harmony underneath with your left hand. So that by itself brings out the melody. And just as on an organ, you'd put, yes?
When you do that, are you adding more harmony notes than in your left hand filling out the chord, or just play the alto or the tenor or the bass?
Yeah, good question. So I was just there adding in more notes. Because if you just play the alto and tenor, sometimes you'll be left without the third of the chord, or other notes might be missing. So that's a case where you want to fill in with the left hand and just basically take it as a, and you know, it might even be worth it, especially if you're first starting to experiment with this, just writing in chords to your copy of the hymn so that you know, okay, F major, C major, F major, and then you can play those chords with your left hand while doing the melody in octaves in your right hand. Conversely, another option is to play octaves with your bass in your left hand. And this gives a very organ pedal-like effect. So really it gives that foundation which the organ typically has with the 16-foot pedal stop, that if you just play at pitch, gives a very different impact too. So particularly for louder, more triumphant verses, I often like to do the octaves in the bass there. Now either octaves you could potentially fill out with chords. It doesn't work as well in the bass because it can get pretty muddy when you get down into the lower register of the piano. But if you fill out chords in your right hand, and one very nice thing to do is just take a third either above the lower octave, or take a third below the higher octave, depending on the harmonic context, and that itself. Another nice effect, and it is one that feels pretty nice under the hand if you've gotten octave reach, which I know not every pianist does. And of course, you can just fill out with total chords, especially if you do broken chords in the left hand. It can also be a really effective thing. But definitely a technique that can be used more at the higher end of the piano than at the lower end. The melody itself, of course, can move to various octaves with accompaniment also jumping around. Oftentimes, I mean, this is one of my default tactics, is just some verse in the hymn, I'll find an excuse to go up to the higher octave. So if it started here, I'll just play the melody up. And then either you can keep the accompaniment at the same pitch level, the left hand, or you can take the left hand up. This creates a particularly suspended, ethereal atmosphere. Of course, you can also do the left hand. Again, this is one case where writing down the chords might help, but you can do the melody in the left hand with chords in the right hand. And you can even do octave melody in your left hand with chords in the right hand. Particularly effective, you know, especially if you want to throw the men of your congregation a bone, since usually the melody is being done up in the ladies' octave. Doing a verse or two where you've got it down more in their register, they'll appreciate that. Various things that you can do for accompaniment. One common pattern is just doing an octave chord leaping bass. So let's find a good hymn to use.
Just a closer walk.
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry.
No. Oh, okay. Sorry. Thought it was a question. So, for instance, if we've got, go back to What a Friend We Have in Jesus, you can fill out the left hand by playing octave. Make the chord as big or small as you'd like, but doing that, just every beat, move up the chord. Is another good tactic of keeping that same harmony going while giving rhythmic interest, because that's one of the main things that you want to do on the piano, is make sure people have a clear idea of the beat so that if the melody has stopped, people still feel like, okay, I've got a sense of the pulse, so I know when to come back in, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a second. Of course, there's also broken chord pattern accompaniments. You can do something as simple as old standby of the Alberti bass. Which is a good standby. You can do more complicated, slightly bigger ones. Arpeggios. You can either just take the arpeggio up and stop there, or you can go up and down. Between the two, those are both tactics that are really nice for pianistic accompaniment. Generally, eighth notes work best. But if you really want to build excitement, you can always do a faster arpeggio. That's going to sound, start sounding a little bit virtuosic, but it is a tactic if you want a special verse and your hands will cooperate. One texture which I actually really like for a more intimate verse is just to take the melody by itself in the right hand and do the chords by themselves in the left hand. So a closely voiced chord in the left hand and right hand melody. If you create a contrast between more octave verses and more simple verses, especially if you can justify it text-wise, that can be a great way to make people consider that text of the hymn in a new light. So definitely think about that, sort of creating appropriate contrast between verses when you're considering what textures to use. You can even just do soprano and bass line by themselves. Which creates a particular spare and open effect if you really want to create a sense of, for a verse. That's a really nice tactic. If your congregation is really familiar with a hymn tune, and you know they don't really need your assistance with the melody, you don't have to play the melody. You can just play harmonies. A friend we have in Jesus, all our sins and griefs to bear. And that can be very nice, just letting the congregation take charge of the melody by themselves while you provide that bit of harmonic backing. Never underestimate the potential power of an a cappella verse. If the congregation is comfortable, just completely stepping back for a verse can be a very nice effect. The last thing I would put in this section is also, if you've been throwing in a lot of variations into verses and you suddenly just go back to a straight SATV, that can also be a very nice effect to use as a way of contrast. And then that turns the SAB hymnal harmony not just into the thing that is always played, but a sudden special color of its own that you can use for particular purposes. So let's go ahead and talk about the thing known as filler. So if you listen to church pianists from traditions where piano is more the standard instrument that's expected in worship, so traditions like the Baptist tradition, church pianists will often use this term filler to refer to what you play on the piano when the tune has stopped. So for instance, What a Friend We Have in Jesus, the fourth measure is just a whole note. So filler is what you do on the piano to keep the rhythm going while everyone is just hanging out on that whole note. Because I don't know if you've had this experience, but if you just play what's in the hymnal on those long notes, oftentimes congregation members will not necessarily know exactly where to come back in. They may not all agree on exactly where to come back in. And when they all breathe and then enter back in, it could end up with a little bit of a staggered phrase beginning until they've gotten into it. So if you keep the rhythm going with some kind of figure, then that provides not just, it's not just filling the time, it's not just random ornamentation that you throw in, but it actually serves purpose for the congregation. Because on the organ, for things like that, you can hold it, the sound isn't going to decay, it's going to hold out. And then when you lift, everyone feels the release, feels how to breathe there. And you can create an effective phrase just by that. On the piano, you can't really do that as much. So you need to create more more rhythmic activity even while everyone's just hanging out there. Generally for filler, you want, I'm sorry?
Amazing Grace has that in the middle too.
Yes, Amazing Grace is another good idea, good hymn for that. So generally for this sort of thing, you want to stay within the chord that the phrase finished on. So you don't want to suddenly introduce a big modulation. I mean, you know, unless you have a particular coloristic moment for it, but use that very sparingly. Just stick within the same harmony. Sometimes you can get away with just a quick shift up a fourth and down a fourth. That would, I think, be the most harmonic motion that you'd want to use on any kind of regular basis. But when you're considering what to play, the simplest option is just repeating that chord on subsequent beats, as I mentioned earlier, with chords being one of the core piano textures. So you have, and you can take those chords anywhere on the piano. You can put them up in the right hand. You can do them down with the left hand. You can do them with both hands. Depending on how big you want it to sound and things such as that. So when you're doing right-hand chords at the top, it's particularly effective often to do a little bit of a roll, especially if you do a seventh. Very nice little thing to throw in there. So that's a particularly nice sort of pianistic trick to throw in there, the rolled chord, especially at the top. It doesn't. It's a little bit more heavy at the bottom. So again, you know, upper is light. You can get away with a lot more precise textures. Lower part of the piano is always going to be heavier and has to be handled with more care. If you're using an accompanimental pattern in that verse, you can simply keep that going. Immediately there, the rhythmic activity that allows everyone to go, okay, one, two, three, breath. If you're wanting to do more elaborate figures, you'll want to make sure that you keep that rhythm to ones that won't interfere in the melody. So you want to have a clear conclusion. And then whatever filler you play, you want to make sure you've ended before the next phrase begins. I mentioned this at the end of this section, but if anyone is familiar with some of Bach's chorale settings like In Dulci Jubilo, BWV 729, does a lot of figurations in between each one. And in most congregational settings, you don't want to take the phrases in between verses for an opportunity to just do your own sort of random figurations all over the place. So keep the rhythm of any filler figures between the notes. So for instance, one, two, three, four. So if you give everyone at least a quarter before the next phrase starts, then that allows them to feel like breath, and you haven't overlapped with something that's going to detract from their entering back into sync. So I've given on the third page a couple potential patterns that you can use. Basically, any sort of notes, any sort of rhythms that are kept within this time frame, within the chord, you can make work. So I put there, for instance, if the melody is, you can do filler patterns like, or you can keep throwing in more ones. And it's to use the same rhythmic pattern for the filler, no matter what chord it is. So for instance, in What a Friend We Have in Jesus, the first line ends on C major. So if you can just do quarter on C. And then when you get to the end of the second line in F major, you can use the same pattern, just quarters, F, F. And that helps to unify a complete stanza of the hymn. One thing that you can often do, and which I like doing, is you can do the first one going one direction, so it's ascending up. Then the second phrase in reverse direction, go down. And then that creates a sort of question. Sort of duality to it, which helps give, okay, phrase one, phrase two, helps, makes things feel more unified. Other figures getting a little bit more active that I like is just the scale up, two, three, or you can go down. That sort of figure is also very nice. You can even throw in things like triplets. Horn call figurations are also very nice. Or so anything like that are also things, especially if you're doing a more dramatic verse, a more sort of those kinds of rhythmic impulses give a very and so enhances the overall mood, if that's the mood that you're trying to create for that particular verse. You can do also figures in the left hand. Again, you can get away with more activity in the upper range of the keyboard. If you're doing it in the lower range, you might want to keep it to even just octaves beneath it. If you start getting more, and then, at the very least, you'll need to be careful of your pedal, because otherwise you're going to start getting down there. Mostly keeping it simple down there works better. And you can even, if you've got a wide spacing, you can put fillers. So there's all these sorts of texture differences that you can create without even changing the harmony. So everyone can still sing in parts if that's what they want to do. But there are certainly options to change the harmony, which is a valuable tool, but one that you do have to use with care. Some simple alterations that you can throw in and that you can get away with in most cases is if you're going from the tonic chord to the subdominant, like here in What a Friend We Have in Jesus, from the first measure to the second measure, you add a lowered seventh, and that serves to create a secondary dominant, if anyone remembers their music theory terminology. So it creates a dominant that leads into the subdominant. So you can always get away with that, assuming the melody isn't playing the E at the same time. So do be careful of those sorts of chromatic clashes. Another harmonic pattern is if you're going from 4 or 2 to 5, raise the fourth scale degree. So for instance, here again in What a Friend We Have in Jesus, much anywhere that shows up. Then if you have a, if you're going from the dominant to sixth chord, submediant, that's where you can raise the fifth scale degree, and that has that deceptive cadence feeling that you can also throw in for any hymn that has that progression. So those are little chromatic additions that are pretty much free in most cases. Just be careful of the melody. Those are the simplest mild reharmonizations to do. If you're going to do something more extensive, probably the next step is, instead of thinking of totally revamping the harmony, just simplifying the harmonies as they're printed in the hymnal. And especially if you want to do some kind of pianistic texture. So for instance, here in Take My Life and Let It Be with the Hendon tune, the harmonies for the second measure in the hymnal, you've got two ones, and then different harmonies every measure. But if you want to continue a sort of arpeggio texture, simplify it so you can take the second measure, instead of doing 1, 6, 4, 5, tonic to dominant, just do dominant. And then you can continue that arpeggio texture in your left hand. And so for instance, in the third verse where you've got 1, 6, 2, 6, 2, instead you could just do 6, 2, 6. And that sort of simplification allows you to create easier harmonies. You know, the more often the harmony changes, the harder it is to do any kind of arpeggio texture. Then you have to sort of start breaking it up a little bit more. But that kind of simplification is a good tactic to take just to allow those sorts of pianistic textures to bear fruit. If you're going to use a more extensive reharmonization, generally those I would only save for one verse maximum, because you don't want to, especially if it is a hymn where someone will be singing parts in the congregation, you can usually get away with maybe one verse doing a reharmonization where they can't sing parts, but you don't want to do all verses where they can't sing parts. So keep that to as a tactic that you throw in for a particular color rather than one you want to do all the time. And especially on piano and with the tempo that most congregations sing hymns at today, if you look at, for instance, organ reharmonization books that are printed at the beginning of the 20th century, they will often have tons of chords, different harmonies on every note. And a lot of that, you know, especially in the Anglican context, is because congregations would have been singing those hymns much slower than we do today. And if you look up, there's a recording on YouTube with the Anglo-Canadian organist Healy Willen playing at his church the Lostrus and the Freuen tune. And they sing it at, has anyone sung that hymn that slowly in congregation? No. So given congregation tempos today, and also given the nature of the piano, if you're going to reharmonize, less is more. Do the same chord for a longer stretch of time. Don't try to change the harmony every note. So, for instance, you can take the opening phrase of the hymn tune Munich and just do measures of 1, 6, 4, 1. As long as people aren't trying to sing all the harmony parts, if they're all in the melody, That sort of harmony is not hard to sing with. You'll want to find one chord that multiple melody notes will sound good with. This doesn't necessarily mean that the chord, that all the melody notes are included in that chord, because you'll hear there's already two, B here and the G here, which don't appear in this D major chord. But you can get away with it, especially in this kind of arpeggio texture. And even here, so I'm harmonizing this with a G major chord, but the first melody note is an A. But you can get away with it because it creates an extended chord. So extended chords, that's the term that's used when you're building up chords by thirds. So you've got a triad, 7th, 9th, 11th, 13th, and you've ended back up where you started. So if you create harmonies like that, those are really effective harmonies that aren't good. They're dissonant, but it's not the kind of harsh dissonance that you got if you were doing something like, but it's a very soft dissonance that is not going to feel hard to sing against. So any harmonies you can do that create those sorts of extended chords will be able to work well with these sorts of piano reharmonizations. Pretty much if you stay within minor harmonies within the key of the melody, you almost can't go wrong whatever chord you play. If you're not getting fancy, you know, it'll work. Maybe some chords will work better than others, which you can experiment with. But it'll never be feel so off that people won't be able to sing with it. So that's definitely the path I would recommend for trying to experiment with reharmonizations. Where it will go wrong is if you have a chromatic clash between the harmony and the melody. So if there's a G sharp in the melody, you don't want to be playing the G major chord. The congregation's not going to like that. So if you've got an accidental in the hymn melody, make sure you are playing a chord that does not conflict with that accidental, or even, or, but whatever you do, don't play a G next to a G sharp. Modal flavors will often work really well if it doesn't conflict with the melody. If you want to go outside the key a little bit, just and the. Sometimes you can get away with, then you can often potentially use a raised 6. For a chord. Again, making sure it doesn't conflict with the melody, but that is a good modal thing to do in a minor key. Of course, make sure whatever harmonic shifts you do, it might be good just to practice in advance singing to your reharmonization yourself, and that'll give you a good clue of, okay, can I actually sing with this, or can I not? So here with O Sacred Head, let me just give you a quick demonstration of how, because this is what I mentioned, that if you play hymnal harmony, make that feel pianistic. But if you use simplified harmonies and reharmonization that works on piano, you can create something that feels a lot more pianistic. Just use chords from the basic key, from A minor / C major. I mean, admittedly, this tune is originally modal, which and as a lot of Lutheran chorales are. So if you have a more modal tune like this or Wondrous Love, those are tunes that work particularly well if you start using this sort of more freer major minor chords underneath it. If you keep the harmonies slow and you keep them in the key, you can make it work well and create that sort of pianistic texture. And these are tactics that you want to employ ideally in service of the text. So you want to always have the hymn text in front of you and look at, okay, what are the words of this stanza? Are they louder? Are they softer? What are tactics that I can do to create a musical feeling that will enhance the text rather than seem to go against it? So as an example, I'll just go through some of what I like to do with It Is Well With My Soul or When Peace Like a River, which is one of those tunes that does work very well for a piano accompaniment if you know how to handle it. So looking at verse one, we've got words like river, and sars like sea billows roll. So that might tell me that I can use a left hand arpeggio, that flowing texture, which creates a sort of watery effect. And then here in the second phrase, on the word sorrows, the hymnal harmony just has a dominant seventh of six there. I like to change the E to, like to throw in an F there to create a diminished seventh, which just creates that extra sort of sorrowful impact. So it's just a minor bit of a word painting, which enhances that particular word. And then for the chorus, maybe do as written for the first half, because this is where you have the SATB harmonies coming in underneath you. With my soul, and then maybe back to arpeggios. Second verse, though Satan should buffet, though trials should come, maybe this is a good opportunity to play your reharmonization card and you play some harmonies, still the same tune, the same pitches, but throw in some more minor harmonies. Paint the words, so you start seeing trials, Christ. So taking those key words and creating a dramatic arc for the hymn as a whole, but even in between individual verses, can be very effective. I want to leave a little bit of time for questions, so I'll just jump ahead for a couple things in the next verses. For He Lives, for the third verse, I like doing and throwing in an octave. Don't put in the bass right at the beginning. And that sort of syncopated entry creates an additional excitement. So that's another good tactic to use there. And then doing, so this is a good opportunity when you've got a more triumphant feeling to use that sort of horn call filler up top there. And then especially in the fourth verse, once you start talking about, because you've got the trumpet coming in, chords, behold back as a scroll. So you really want to start throwing in some sort of fanfare figure up there to really be like, bam, the trumpet is sounding and the Lord is descending. So that's just a quick overview of some considerations that you can use when you're looking at different verses in a hymn and trying to figure out how to apply these text shifts. Does anyone have any questions that have come up about anything?
Would it be appropriate to start out with the basic hymn and get into more of the creativity within the singing?
Yeah, of course. I mean, especially, you know, again, you have to consider your congregation. If it's a hymn that they sort of know, but not really well, maybe you want to just stick with the hymnal at first to give them added support. And then, you know, once they've sung it through once, you can start throwing in some little additions. If it's something like Amazing Grace that everyone probably knows cold, then you can, you know, as long as you give the right harmonies, you can probably start out with whatever. Any other questions?
Do you set the tempo for the hymns? Or, okay, you just said Amazing Grace, and then I made the smart mark over here.
Oh, yeah.
They tend to want to sing it slower than what I want to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to maintain the tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a war zone.
Well, there's always a bit of... There's always a bit of a back and forth. Ultimately, at least, you know, my philosophy, ultimately you as the keyboard accompanist are actually the leader of the congregation in the tempo. You're certainly not gonna follow what the congregation does. If you wait for the congregation to follow you, then they're going to be waiting for you. Suddenly the tempo is just gonna drag and drag and drag.
It's like when you play for your funeral and there's all these people that don't normally come to your congregation, and it's a muddled mess.
Yeah, so I think that's a case where you want to start making the melody a little bit more clear. Maybe even making the rhythm. Start really like drilling in that beat, beat, beat if you want people to come with you. Because ultimately, the best thing is to stick to your guns and let the congregation come alongside you. Now, there are cases where you might have to compromise if there's a particular congregational tradition. Some hymns in particular, like How Great Thou Art is an example, where those chords towards the end of the chorus, how long do you hold them? Because ultimately, you know, that sort of hymn, you know, that's often done in a context where there's actually a song leader out front, not by the keyboard, who's actually directing the congregation, which is not my favorite way of doing things. But if you are the leader, you know, give a clear rhythm and encourage the congregation to come along with your rhythm. Yeah. But I would definitely encourage you that, you know, don't let the energy sag too much. Yeah. At this point, I basically have a bag of tools in my head. And well, especially like for the Wednesday night services that I talked about earlier, I don't really know any of the hymns in advance because the congregation just comes in and says whatever they want to sing that night. So that's a scenario where I can't actually do the plan in advance. So I just, when I turn to the hymn, I'm immediately scanning the text and I'm looking, okay, this verse is probably a good one to throw the melody up an octave. This one, I'll want to do octaves in the bass. This one will be a little bit more excited, etc. So I'm already thinking about the plan right there, but it's very quickly thrown together. If you're just starting out with getting a little bit more creative with hymn playing, I definitely recommend practicing all the verses in advance and even writing it out. Because that's something that, for instance, when I started getting more creative in hymn playing on the organ, I would often write down, verse by verse, okay, I'm gonna use this registration here, pulling this there, et cetera, et cetera. But once you've done it for long enough, you start having that bag of tools that you just know, okay, I'm going to pull out and reach tool Z right here. So the more you do it, the more comfortable it gets. But at the beginning, yes, go ahead and write it out, practice it in advance.
I'd like to think Lutheran congregations are more adept at following, sticking with the melody, even if you play it up an octave. But I've played at a Methodist church where afterwards the person said, Susan, it sounds very nice, but we can't sing that high.
Well, I should think not. Well, tell those women, to feel for the poor men who never get the melody played in their octave. All right, thank you so much for coming out.
Thank you for listening in to this recorded session from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Institute on Liturgy, Preaching, and Church Music. We hope you'll join us at one of our conferences in the future. Visit lcms.org/worship-institute for more information. lcms.org/worship-institute.